football on Off the Ball.
Wherever presence, Boston Lual is at the back once again. Stoke had a brilliant victory at the weekend away to Southampton. They've started the season excellently, as has Boston, considering he's been in the team for the last few weeks.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
You ain't shit. I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
My fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof at the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have, and, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not lies. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jim McGuinness in his life.
And very welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5. You can WhatsApp us, folks, today, 087-9180-180. So the theme of this week's Saturday panel is how we can talk about mental health in sports, teaching young players, parents, coaches and volunteers about how to broach a vital subject. So we're delighted to have in the studio ahead of the game ambassadors Anton Toehill, the Derry footballer and a former AFL player with Collingwood in Australia, and Cork Camogie star Saoirse McCarthy. Anton and Saoirse, you're both very welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us indeed. Eh?
So Anton and Saoirse, you're ambassadors and workshop facilitators for the Head of the Game programme for Movember in tandem with the Gaelic Players Association. So the Movember Head of the Game programme has reached almost 10,000 GAA and GPA members in its first 2 years, equipping young athletes with the tools to build mental strength and promote open dialogue. For more information, folks, visit aheadofthegame.movember.com. If you're affected as well by any of the issues in this piece going forward, folks, please contact the Samaritans at 116123 or email at joe@samaritans.ie. That is joe@samaritans.ie. So, Anton, why did you get involved in this ahead of the game?
I'm just very glad to be here. Thanks very much for having us, indeed. But I'm just here with the charity, I suppose, because it just gives us such a good opportunity to actually impact people at the kind of first level of mental health. You know, I'm training to be a doctor and I've been fortunate enough to spend a bit of time with people who are in kind of acute mental health crisis and stuff and within the hospital. And oftentimes whenever people get there, the strain's obviously very great. And if we can make an impact nice and early, it's a much more benefit, I think. And this program allows us to go out and chat to people at the kind of the base level of mental fitness, I suppose, rather than whenever they're unwell, and make a bit more of a difference via that, you know. Speaking probably from why this program in particular, whenever you have impacts in your own life from people that you had known maybe not being here anymore, you get the opportunity, you're going to take it to try and impact anyone else to make sure they wouldn't have to go through anything kind of similar, and you can take a lot of learnings from a program, I guess, you know.
Did you have that experience?
It's probably saying I'm very fortunate that I haven't had too many difficult aspects in my own life, you know, but I was fortunate enough to know a fellow called Red Oak Murphy from Sligo. He was out at the North Melbourne Football Club whenever I started at Collingwood as well, and I kind of got to know him through that, and unfortunately he's no longer with us now, and I took a lot of learnings from it, basically that any opportunity I could get to be involved in a programme where you could impact people or any sort of mental health initiative, I was going to take it, you know, and I'm very, very fortunate to be part of this programme.
He's a very talented footballer for Sligo and DCU in 2022. He tragically took his own life. You knew him. And I read a piece that Monica Clerken did in the Irish Times, Anton, with his parents. And in that interview, his mother Geraldine said, and I quote here, "The hope would be that if somebody reads this, if they've mental health issues, that they wouldn't hide, that they talk up. Obviously, there was something that Red Oak covered up, or maybe there was an accumulation of stuff that week that got to him. We don't know. We hope they would talk, because I don't think young ones do talk." From reading that interview, there was, you know, a real celebration of his life in the piece, and you knew him, but there were a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are an awful lot of questions. There always is, I think.
Yeah.
And the way Geraldine spoke in that interview and the way Redmond spoke as well about Red himself was very powerful, and to hear her explaining how she felt about it so eloquently, hopefully it reached some people, especially young people, that they do feel comfortable to come forward with how they feel and seek help, because it is there and available for people whenever they do need it. It's just making them aware of all the different things that can help them, you know.
You're two Irish guys down in Australia together, mm. yeah. So you left a mark on you, obviously.
Aye, look, it's the community down there. Whenever you went over to play AFL, I suppose whenever I went over, was particularly tight-knit among the Irish fellas, because we had all done the same thing. We'd all come from Ireland to go and try and play a sport that none of us had ever played before, and we all had similar struggles and challenges with it. Red only was there for just the 1 year then in 2019 before coming home, whereas I probably spent a couple more years there. But you always have a mark on each other from that. Like, I was just in Australia there the past 5 weeks, and I was able to catch up with a lot of the Irish boys I was there with at the same time. So there's a lot of memories and a lot of things to look back on positively, you know.
Saoirse, why did you get involved in this campaign?
Kind of came up, fell into my path. My summer coming out of college in 2023, and I jumped at the opportunity, to be honest. You know, I suppose growing up in Cork, Camogie is such a big part of my life, and I always had such support, I suppose, around me, and when I was struggling, maybe had so many people that I could fall back on, but always wondered that maybe if I wasn't good at Camogie, do the ordinary club player have this kind of support? And I suppose if we can go into clubs and talk to young people, and like Anton said, that prevention side of things, rather than cure, and just encourage people to speak up and hopefully like help someone that might need it. You know, you never know who you're going to be talking to in the room or who it's going to affect. So it's absolutely brilliant to be a part of, and the group of people as well. Like, there's over 30 facilitators now from every county in Ireland playing, or part of the GPA as well. So like, it's brilliant to be a part of. And yeah, I suppose I got involved that first initial, like, if I can help someone that maybe doesn't have the same supports that I did when I was growing up, and just letting people know that they're not alone, and to not be afraid to speak up, and there's strength in speaking as well.
What was your journey? Did you avail of any supports throughout the years?
Oh, definitely. You know, I suppose when I was in college, it was nearly pointed out to me before I realised myself I suffered from seasonal depression. Would be quite down in November, December time nearly every year, but, you know, didn't realise it. And it was nearly pointed out to me by Keith Ricken in MTU that every time I went to talk to him about me being down, it was around the same time of the year, and we kind of uncovered that and, you know, went about it. And look, I suppose realisation is the biggest thing, but also action. And I know now that when I do feel down, or I do recognise the signs of myself, that I speak up about it. And I suppose ahead of the game has helped me an awful lot too that way, in realising my signs. And everyone's different, you know, there's no one yes. person that's the same or acts the same. So I suppose it's saying that too. You know, you could show you all the signs in the world, but I suppose the biggest thing is when they're not themselves. And yeah, I suppose just being a part of it is brilliant, to be honest. And having that circle of friends as well, that, you know, we could talk to any one of the facilitators in the group and pick up the phone and talk to them too. So it's a great support network too.
How does it manifest itself when you're not feeling yourself?
Ironically, go kind of quiet. And then a big sign for me is if I stop eating, if I lose my appetite.
Okay.
I know then that I'm probably upset about something, or I'm down. You know, I think that's the biggest thing for me, is I could go a whole day without eating a morsel of food, and it could be 8 o'clock at night, and I'd realise, and I'd be like, oh God. And that's not ideal when you're trying to train and play at a high level. So it was affecting my camogie as well. So I suppose that's probably one of my biggest red flags. That's how I know I realise. And the first thing I do is when I see it happening, I'll tell one of my friends, and just put it out there and make sure that someone else is aware, and it's not just a burden that I'm going to carry by myself, you know, and then I'll do something about it.
So you're talking to people now, Anton. Would you get training yourself on how to talk to people when you're going around the country?
Oh, we get trained excellently. It was a wonderful experience training, actually. I think Saoirse would agree. We had two guys come over from Rugby League Cares who were former professional rugby league players, and they were involved in rolling out ahead of the game programme in England through rugby league clubs. And they were able to share with us loads of the different examples about facilitation rather than delivery, I think, is the big key, where you're trying to bring people along with you as you go through the workshop. So the training was excellent, and it really gave us a few tools that we could use to try and not only just deliver things well, but how we can actually bring the message across in a way that people will remember and take home with them, you know.
So what are the workshops like? How does it kind of play out, as it were?
So you would come in, you'd introduce yourself, and then we would talk a little bit about what mental fitness is and what it means to be mentally fit. And then they kind of tie in with physical fitness, because everybody there, all the young people anyway, are all athletes and they're trying to improve their physical fitness. And that's the first and foremost thing in their mind for a lot of them. But whenever you can draw the parallels between that and your mental fitness, it kind of, you know, brings them, give an idea of where they're at with it. We talk a little bit about a couple of examples of whenever you're mentally unwell, the kind of things that can happen and what the kind of things you can feel, and then how you can recognize those signs in your peers, what things you might notice, and different ways to help you remember those things. And then the workshop finishes then with like it's a really good little model called the ALEC model, which gives people an idea of how to have conversations with each other. So if you notice that someone is not 100%, just how to have those tough conversations and a little structure to fall back on that they can actually adhere to and hopefully never have to use, but be prepared to if they do. The workshop then finishes up with you providing a couple of examples of different resources that are out there for people in Ireland, be it north or south, that are the charitable organisations or the different pathways you can go through your healthcare system and that as well.
So yeah, GP.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
So signs, what would be the signs you could be talking about that? You talked about the mental fitness compared to the physical fitness, that the mental fitness might be under a bit of strain.
Well, we just look for changes in people's behaviour that they might not be 100% themselves. So if, say, someone is really, really chatty and then they kind of withdraw, like Saoirse mentioned, she has herself, you know, whenever she's not 100%. People that might be lashing out, be a bit more angry when they used to be a bit more irritable. It's really trying to make people aware that if someone's normally present for different activities and then they maybe not be going to them as often, they might be trying to withdraw to themselves, maybe not going to training as much or catching up after school, or those kind of signs and symptoms. I think that the powerful thing about Ahead of the Game is that it teaches people what these signs are, that they might be able to recognise them in themselves. And then also if they can see it in their friends and people around them, they'll be able to have the conversations a lot easier because everyone's had the same training, you know. The context that we kind of put it in, or I like to anyway, when we're talking about anxiety specifically, would be you've got a big championship match ahead of yourself. And it's when you're in control of your own emotions versus whenever you're not in control of your own emotions. And putting it in that kind of context allows people to have a bit more like relatability to it as well.
Does addiction or anything like that come into it, or substance abuse?
No, there's actually no coverage of addiction or substance abuse as part of the program as of yet. I was just actually over at Movember's headquarters in Melbourne there. And I met up with the guys who like developed the program, and they're keen to try and make advancements to it and different things. So it's something that could come in the future, but it's not currently involved in the program yet. No.
What about rewarding the conversations you've had that have been rewarding? Does anything stand out for you, Saoirse, that you feel, well, that actually this workshop that I did really made a difference, or somebody said it to me afterwards? Or
oh, definitely. I think every one of the workshops, they come up to you and you might get a parent that's like, look, thanks a million. And I feel like you don't really know until after the parent session. Like, the kids aren't going to tell you really, I don't know, you might have different experiences. But there is one that stands out to me. It was probably one of my first ones last year. And we gave a workshop and it was actually a really small number, not a whole pile turned up. And
what age were the?
I think it was under 14, under 16 boys team. And not a whole number turned up. We were kind of disappointed, like, look, oh, there's only a handful of lads here now, but look, we'll do it anyway. And went through the whole workshop, went through the parents one, similar enough, small numbers. But in that workshop, we were having a conversation with the parents, because the parents and coaches session is a lot more conversational, I find. You know, like, I suppose we're learning from them just as much as they're learning from us. And one of the parents said, look, I'm really glad that you spoke about anxiety in that session, and that the other boys understood anxiety and the different signs, and they were all really well, really knowledgeable about it, because one of her son was in the session and she said that he felt quite isolated an awful lot of the time. He'd suffer with anxiety, but he didn't feel like any of his friends understood. But I was able to say, look, all of them knew about anxiety. All of them were very... I suppose they were able to empathize with someone who had anxiety, and that's something we tried to do as well, is maybe, you know, maybe play a game with them, do a bit of exercises, get their heart rate going, get their breathing going, and maybe say, look, you're feeling like this now is a normal feeling after exercise, But imagine feeling like that, sitting down to do your homework or getting on the school bus, because that's how somebody with anxiety might feel. And just trying to get that empathy going and make them realize that that's what it actually is. And yeah, I suppose like stories like that you hear and you just feel like, God, you know, we were only talking to a very small group of lads there, but it made a difference. It made one boy feel like his friends knew what he was going through and maybe a little bit more included in the team and stuff like that. So it's really rewarding. And I've given 2 sessions in my own club, and I can see even like younger
clubs,
at Coursey Rovers, down in West Cork. So given 2 sessions there to 2 different girls teams. And I think even they got to see a different side of me. Those young girls, I suppose they're used to seeing me on the pitch or poking around in the field, but I suppose you're showing your vulnerable side, and it's led to really, really open conversations with young people in my own club and girls who might feel way more comfortable to talk to me now and come up and say something. And it's unreal. Like I love being a part of something so impactful.
And your experience of rewarding conversations and sessions, Anton?
I am very similar to Saoirse. Like there's sometimes you might be a wee bit disheartened if some smaller clubs mightn't be able to get the numbers out, but you can make a massive difference if there's only one person takes one thing away, you know. The adult conversation, I think, is often more important. Like more.
So
important.
This is like a strata. You talk to the maybe the younger people first, and then the adults afterwards.
Yeah. So you do a two hour like block. You do an hour for the kids, and then you do an hour for their parents and coaches. And I think the kids are probably a bit more mental health literate than the adults a lot of the time, because I think it's part of their education now at school. Whereas a lot of adults have never had any opportunity to talk about how they feel or learn about how people feel or why they might interact a certain way. And I think adults take a lot more from it sometimes than the kids do, to be honest. One of my favourite conversations that I've had was actually on the way out of the door after a club session, where I was just packing up my stuff and happened to fall on the step beside one of the mothers who was involved. And I could tell that something was at her and she wanted to talk to me a wee bit about it. And I ended up spending 25 minutes, 30 minutes after the session talking to her one-on-one, because she had one of her children at home was really struggling. And she was very keen to hear about like different resources and different valuable things to get. So hopefully she's got like the thing about this, you don't often hear about where things go to and how people get on. But I think that definitely you're making an impact on a personal level with many, many people that are able to take things and actually use them and utilize them going forward, you know.
We're speaking to ahead of the game ambassadors, Anton Tohill and Saoirse McCarthy here on Off the Ball Saturday, about the Movember initiative and sport and mental health. Chelsea 2, Fulham 0, by the way, in the Premier League, just to digress. So how does a GAA club get involved in this, or how does a GAA club connect with the program you're doing?
So we've got a fantastic link that's available online. If you just Google movember.ie/aheadofthegame, it's a great link. You can read all about the program there, and then how your club can get involved from there as well. They register their interest, and then our boss, I suppose, Corey, gets involved and links up all the GAA clubs with a facilitator, and then myself and Saoirse will engage with their health and wellbeing officer of the club before we arrive, and we'll go and deliver to whatever team that the club would like us to. So we're a men's health charity at Movember, and we primarily look after like men's health issues, but I'd say I've delivered these workshops to more girls teams than boys teams, I would say, because obviously mental health impacts everyone, whether that be their own or whether that be the people around them as well, and how that can impact them. So it's a brilliant initiative for everyone, and we've been get loads of good feedback really on how it's gone out in Ireland so far.
Let me guess, you're both mid-20s?
Yeah.
25.
Not bad. Okay. So 10 years ago, would this have been available? Has the conversation, the openness, the maybe breaking down of stigmas improved, say, even the last 10 years from when you were the age of the people you're speaking to now? Or is it the same?
Well, I'd say it's improved an awful lot. I would imagine.
Yeah.
From I was 15 anyway. Like I don't know, but
I think even what they're learning in school, like they're so, like you said, literate, like mental health literate. The kids know way more than you think they do about mental health and different resources. Even like they're learning it in school as part of the curriculum. I definitely say that the stigma around mental health is slowly dropping, and I think like that's something we do as well. Like you were talking about earlier, comparing it to your physical health or your physical fitness. And just breaking those barriers, like you'd go to the doctor if you had something wrong with you. physically, and it's the exact same for your mental health. And I suppose it's just breaking that stigma around talking about mental health and normalizing it, I suppose. But I do think that the kids these days are way more literate around mental health. I suppose when I was younger, I probably never even questioned or thought that, it could be something when my mental health was wrong with me. You know, I just thought I was upset about something, and usually camogie. but yeah, look, I suppose it's growing, and health in general. I suppose, Anton, you'd be way more knowledgeable about this, but like, health is always evolving and knowledge is always growing. So I suppose that's going to happen in time, is hopefully in another 10 years time we can look back and everyone is just going to be normalizing talking about their mental health just the same as they would their physical health.
Yeah, no, I like, as Saoirse says, if you were to work in any kind of general practice or primary care setting, you're, depending on where you're at, the percentage of cases which are to do with people's mental health is quite high, and that burden, I suppose, is really good that we're actually talking to people about how they feel, and they're not feeling that it's becoming too much for them to deal with themselves, and they can actually reach out and seek that kind of help, you know, because that's what a lot of the care is available for, you know.
Okay, we've got to take a break. We'll continue this conversation with Anton Toehill and Saoirse McCarthy after 2 o'clock here on Off the Ball Saturday. Just to bring up to speed on what's going on in the sports news in terms of the scores, Chelsea 2, Fulham 0 in the Premier League. That game is, an hour old. João Pedro got the first goal in the first half, and Enzo Fernandez, a skipper, from the penalty spot in the second half. And in the Championship at the moment, it is Middlesbrough 1, Sheffield United 0, QPR 1, Charlton 1, and Stoke 0, West Brom 1. You want to get in touch with the panel? Any questions for Anton or Saoirse, you can. 087-9180-180. That is 087-9180-180. That's our WhatsApp number. Looking forward to having more of a conversation about sport and mental health after 2 o'clock.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Andrew, welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. This is part two of the Saturday panel. We're chatting about sport and mental health with the head of the game ambassadors, Anton Toehill, the Derry footballer and former AFL player with Collingwood, and the Cork Camogie star, Saoirse McCarthy. So Anton and Saoirse are ambassadors and workshop facilitators for Head of the Game programme for Movember in tandem with the Gaelic Players Association. The Movember Head of the Game programme has reached almost 10,000 GAA and GPA members in its first 2 years, equipping young athletes with the tools to build mental strength and promote open dialogue. For more information, visit headofthegame.movember.com. If you're affected by any of the issues in this piece, please contact the Samaritans at 116123 or email jojo@samaritans.ie. You're telling me off air, Anton, you must have done about, 40 talks now?
Yeah, I think I've done over 40. I'm definitely on the higher end of our facilitators in terms of who's delivered the most. I've been able to reach loads of different clubs all across Ulster, so I'm very privileged, I suppose, that way to have such opportunity.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are challenging moments as well as rewarding moments when you're having these conversations.
100%. Now there's some really tough conversations, because we do give people the opportunity to talk about how they're feeling as well, and there can be some quite raw and emotional moments for people. There was one in particular that sticks out was in a club in Fermanagh, and there was a fella who had lost one of his best mates quite suddenly. Within, I think it was about 5 weeks prior to the session by suicide, and his emotions were quite raw, and he was, I suppose, that session was really a him for to try and get his feelings out. That it was like, why were we not here sooner to talk about these things? Why could we not? And obviously you can't be blaming him for having such a response, because he's so emotional about losing one of his best mates. And I think it just shows to you the work that there still needs to be done to get as much good word out there as possible. And that was a challenging session. But I think that the whole community then on the back of that are able to realise that this man could be struggling as well, and just to make sure to put an extra arm around him and give him the support that he needs as well.
It's almost as well hard for you to know what to say in that moment too.
Oh, well, again, I've been, I suppose, fortunate and unfortunate. I've dealt with that quite a bit in the hospital, and I've seen people at their lowest through that, and I'm in a very privileged position that I've been part of conversations around end-of-life care before. I've been part of conversations with people that have actually passed away as well, and I suppose I've seen really, really compassionate and empathetic doctors deal with those scenarios in much more of an acute phase than that. And I would like to think that I managed it okay.
Yes, yes.
But it would definitely be tough for someone who hasn't had much opportunity
as
me.
Didn't have the tools to know what to do. Yes. Yeah. And have you had stark conversations as well when you've done over 30 sessions?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And like that, Antonio telling that story there brought me back to, I had a session down in Cork, maybe in the first year of facilitating the programme, and we had given the two sessions, they both went really well. Loads of really good, open and honest conversation. And as we were clearing up, it's always as we're clearing up, one of the fathers came up to me and was like, look, thanks a million for coming in. You know, my daughter, I met her in the car park. She said that it was a really worthwhile session and really appreciate it. Look, he had actually lost a 13-year-old to suicide the year previous. And he was just kind of saying like that too, you know, look, if you were here before, maybe it could be different, but thank God you're here now. And like, you got to talk to one of my, he was really, really just thanking us for coming really and showing that. I just thought he was so brave for even saying that and coming. And I think it put things in perspective of what we're actually doing and what it's all about. I suppose it's helping families and helping people help each other and maybe shining the light on, again, like you said, who's struggling. And we were talking to 25 people in that room about mental health, and I suppose all 24 of them knew that that man was going through that. And I suppose if that, the arm can go around in the future, or, I suppose that's what makes GAA so special, is that clubs are in communities and everyone's from there and everyone knows what everyone's going through. So I suppose that's probably why the GAA is so special, and it makes those conversations really, really, I suppose, intimate, that team. I always say, like, you could be talking to an under 12 or under 13 team, and I said, look, lads, you're going to be playing together for the next 20 years if you're lucky. And I say to the parents, I said, well, if they're playing for the next 20 years, you'll be standing on the bank. So I suppose it's just letting them know that they're all in this together, and if you think you're going through something on your own, you're not. You're guaranteed that there's someone else going through something similar. So I suppose it's all about just helping each other out and being there for the people that are in your club.
That's really tough. That's really tough. The way to talk, like, talking is one thing, and talking, I think, is a big part of this, even this talk. talking is the first step to, look, everybody has their own issues. I'm not a doctor or a mental health professional. All I can say is that I would have had traumatic grief, complicated grief, and I think one of the best things I ever did in my life was get counselling. And I had counselling not too often, but with a really good person for about 5 years. And the best thing I ever did, and really gave me the tools and the pathway to get through the difficulties I was having. And that there would be any stigma or any shame around dealing with your mental health, I just think can't exist now anymore in society. Because I suppose, just as comparable with your physical health, there's no shame in it, there's no stigma in it. People might have different mental health challenges around different things. They might find that they go to their GP, they might not take medication, they might take counselling, they might take therapy, they might take whatever route they need to do to get to the best place that they can do for themselves. All I know from my own perspective was speaking to somebody, getting direction, and finding out the answers for myself to be kinder to myself and make things better for myself was the right way to go. So, look, in my perspective, that was one of the best things I ever did. I don't know if you've ever had anecdotal evidence from parents or coaches or whatever that this is the way to go.
No, I suppose we can even speak from our own experience. Like, we're very fortunate with Movember, like the charity, as part of our contract to work, we have to engage in counselling, mandatory, every year. And we're teamed up with a guy, I'm sure you'll not mind us dropping his name, but he's a guy called Justin Campbell from Galway, who used to play hurling for Galway as well. And he's brilliant, to be honest. Like, I myself have never found a massive amount of value in psychologists, I suppose, like through underage sport and then professional sport, and then back into the GAA, you get to engage with sports psychologists, where it's all about performance, and how to get this or that out of your game. But to talk to someone with really no skin in my game just about how I'm getting on as a very fortunately mentally healthy person, I found it absolutely wonderful. It's a brilliant experience, and I would encourage absolutely everybody, if they can find the time to get involved with someone just to talk about how they feel and how they're getting on. It's a brilliant experience personally, I've found anyway. And I think whenever we sit at the front of the room and tell people that we've engaged in counselling, it makes people a lot more comfortable to share actually their own journey as well. So like I've had multiple sessions where people have said, this is the first time I've told anybody this, but I've been getting counselled for this problem for 2 years, you know, and people feeling comfortable able to share that is all part of the removing the stigma of it. And us, I suppose, as ambassadors and facilitators for the programme, to be able to carry that flag in any way, shape or form is another privilege we have for being involved, you know.
Huge, yeah. No, 100%. And like, we do group sessions as well twice a year now, where we all come together as facilitators and share these stories that, you know, we might go through, might be a really hard situation to deal with. But knowing that, you know, Anton's probably going through something similar when he's delivering up in Ulster, and we can share those stories and help each other through it as well, is massive. And having that support network is huge. And Justin obviously holds those sessions too. But it's huge. And I suppose it's breaking that stigma around, look, we can talk about it. Same way I'm going to go to the physio, I'm going to go and see the counsellor if I'm not feeling okay. And I have no problem in saying that. And I think coming from us as probably elite sports people in Ireland, you know, you have, you're talking to kids as a camogie player or a footballer, they're maybe more inclined to listen to us. And I suppose that's why they have us delivering the programmes in the first place, is that we're not teachers, or some of us aren't medical professionals.
Which might be role models.
Yeah, that's just role models. And that's the idea, that, you know, we can advise them nearly as a peer to the players' side of things, and show them that, look, there's no weakness in saying that I've gotten counselling, or I've gotten help through this, or I've struggled in the past. And we show that, like, the start of the players' session, there's like 6 elite sports stars between Olympians and boxers and all these things. And we all ask the kids, what do these people have in common? And it's always, look, they're champions of the world, they're this, that, and the other thing, they're determined, they're hardworking. But something, we get down to it in the end, they've all struggled with their mental health, and most importantly, they've all spoken out about it. And you realise that it doesn't matter whether you're the world heavyweight champion of the world, or you're the bin man, or the CEO of a company, it can affect absolutely anybody. And you don't get a t-shirt that says, I have a mental health problem. You can just talk about it, and it's okay, and it's breaking that stigma that it can affect anyone. You know, there's no one immune to it. So, yeah, that's probably.
Well said. Well said. Just with younger people that you're dealing with a lot, look, in the last 10, 20 years, social media, smartphones, everybody seems to have a phone now. Doesn't even matter what age you are. Is that something that's talked about a lot in these, by parents or coaches to you?
Yeah, I suppose one of my favourite things as part of the parent session anyway is, like, the parents, just the big thing parents would say, the complaint was, oh, the kids don't want to talk to me. They don't want to talk. And they say, oh, they're just looking at their phones, or looking at this or that. And the children's screen time is obviously a lot higher than, screen time wasn't even a thing whenever their parents were growing up, you know. But my thing to try and get them to engage a bit more would be, like, if the parent themselves can share a wee bit about how they feel or what their day was like. So, favourite thing, whenever a child comes home from school and is like, oh, you know, how did you get on today at school, son? And he's like, oh, good. What did you learn? Nothing, is the typical answers you get from your child. And the way I like to try and get parents engaged would be, look, if they say nothing, and say, well, you know, you're not going to ask about my day. And then the child might ask or might not. And even if they don't ask, then just tell them. Say, well, I got frustrated today at work whenever my boss didn't allow me to do this. Or I got excited by the opportunity to lead this team as part of my job. Or I didn't like whenever this happened to me today because it made me annoyed. And trying to use more words to describe your own emotions to your child. And trying to set up regular times to chat face-to-face with your children, I think, and building that kind of emotional intelligence away from the phones, you know. The thing about the phones is a lot of children are now more comfortable talking through their phone. They're more comfortable talking via message, and we're, as part of the program, able to deliver advice to go and seek different, like, interventions based upon your comfort. So text about it. It's a wonderful charity that if you text hello to a number
50808,
good memory, I wasn't sure myself. If you text hello to 50808, you get in touch with someone 24/7 availability to discuss how you feel just via text, and unfortunately a lot of children feel more comfortable doing that. But the whole idea for me is to try and build up the emotional intelligence and comfort to discuss how you feel. So the first day, if the children doesn't ask you how you feel, next time whenever you ask them how they get on at school, they might actually open up a bit more, and then the next day a bit more, and then they actually talk about what's annoying them or what they enjoy. And that's to me the whole point of the program, I suppose, is to not to wait till people are unwell to recognise it. It's to be able to build these mentally healthy and resilient strategies before we ever need to have conversations about crisis, you know.
Getting some WhatsApps in here, 0879 180 180, for Anton Tohill and Serge McCarthy. What a great conversation. Well, thank you. Are the workshops exclusively for team sports or GA, or do they welcome athletes from running, boxing, etc.?
So at the minute, the programme is exclusively run through GA clubs. And the whole idea of having it through a team would be that you get to see these people every week and you get opportunity to catch up more. And it is really ahead of the game, and trying to improve the team's mental health literacy and then performance on the pitch as well is the idea, to try and bring it together. But Movember are a charity, and they work through clubs all around the world in different sports, and I'm sure that there will be different opportunities opening up in the future across other sports as well.
How do facilitators, another question, feel about the impact of social media on the mental health of players?
That's a tricky one, because I feel like it's a social media too, and it might be an outlet for some people. Obviously you have that age old look, bullying used to finish when you were at school before, whereas now they come home with it, and you hear all these stories. And look, I have nephews and nieces at home, and I can see it for myself. You know, they're glued to the phones. But even myself, I always put my hand up to the parents and I say, look, I'm 25 and I'm not proud of my screen time, you know. And I suppose that we can all take a little bit of ownership over it, and take the good with the bad. I suppose it can be really positive for some people, but obviously it can become overwhelming. And like Anton said, I suppose it's developing those social tools in order to be able to have a life outside of that too, and be able to put the phone down and be able to separate what's really not, what's not, I suppose.
Well done, folks, on the work you're doing with the head of the game and Movember. I just might want to get on to small matter of what you do on the pitch. That's all right.
No problem.
Anthony Tohill. So your dad, were you immersed in this when you were growing up? The fact that he was a All-Ireland winner with Derry, midfielder, Manchester United trialist.
My father was pretty successful now, to be fair to him. He had a brilliant career. And I suppose when you're younger, like most people, they would say, oh, they look up to Diego Maradona or Cristiano Ronaldo or whatever. But like, my dad was my hero, and I've no problem saying it. Like, I'm very fortunate to have grown up with someone that I can look up to as well, and not just how he was on the pitch, but how he was off it as well. Like, he's a brilliant man, and as everybody would say about how good a person he is, and that to me is the main thing, to be honest. But yeah, I suppose whenever I was growing up, I played probably a bit more soccer than Gaelic up until I was about 14 or 15, and then whenever I started to really grow, I was probably, my body wasn't really keeping up with where my mind was in terms of the game. So I probably struggled a wee bit when I was 14, 15. And that's probably when I felt the weight of trying to live up to someone else's expectations the greatest. But whenever I got to around that 17 mark, and I started just to be like enjoying myself playing sport again. And that's when my Gaelic really took off, and I started to be able to show what I could do for everybody, you know. So yeah, that was
my journey. Do we have a photo here, Shane? You as a baby with Anthony Tohill, for any of our digital viewers. That's when they won the National League in 2000 in a replay. So there you go.
Yeah, that's me at 5 months old or 5.5 months old there. So that's a treasured memory now, that one. That one's up in the house, and that's probably one of my favourite photographs of us.
That's fantastic, with you and the Derry jersey and everything. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So Australia, was that a good experience?
Brilliant. No, Australia for me was a phenomenal experience. Like, to go out there at 18 years of age and be a professional athlete, the learning curve is so steep in terms of what you need to do to try and learn a whole new game and get yourself and your body in the position to compete properly against guys that have been doing this all their life and guys that have been playing professionally for years and years before you. So you learn an awful lot about yourself, about what sports mean, about how to actually prepare and perform. Unbelievable experience. And I was very, very grateful to the Collingwood Football Club for the opportunity. And I was kind of frustrated myself whenever Queens wouldn't allow me to defer my medicine anymore and use my next contract to try and kick on a bit. But unfortunately, when the decision had to be made, medicine to me is too good an opportunity to have turned down with a 1 year contract on the table. So
sure, sure. You, is this right that you've got Korean martial arts background?
Sarisha? Yeah, yeah.
Talk to us about that. What is that?
I don't know that.
Do you know?
No.
Yeah, I did it from when I was 8 or 9 until I was...
What is Korean martial arts?
It's Kuk-sul-wan is what it's called. It's kind of like Taekwondo, but it's probably more of a really well-rounded martial art. Loads of weapons, a lot of gymnastics, sparring. I was in Barcelona, Edinburgh, Liverpool, competing. I got my black belt in 2016 and kind of Camogie took the forefront then. After that, probably COVID was probably the last time I properly practiced my martial arts. But
what did it do for your mind and body?
Yeah, unreal. I suppose it teaches you an awful lot about yourself, and it takes an awful lot of discipline, and I suppose learning as well. You're constantly learning different moves or tiny movements that you think is going to be easy, but you need to really think about it. I suppose that's that the flexibility, strength, balance, all of these things have stood to me, I feel, and I wouldn't change it for the world, and have full intentions of taking it back up when I retire.
Sounds scary, to be honest.
It's terrifying.
You should see me with a sword.
No, I'm so, like, the first time I met Sarisha, like, we were down to learn how to facilitate these workshops, and we were pucking about outside because I'm not a hurler. I've never played hurling.
Caught a ball over your head.
But Sarisha comes over to me. She jabs the end of the hurl into my ribs and hits me a shoulder, and I'm like, what on earth is going on here? You know, and she's just whacking. She puts the hurl up, touches the ball away, and she's very skillful now with that as well. With the whole Camogie thing, I'm sure you know. But like, I was just, what on earth is going on here? Like.
Not half competitive.
That makes a bit of sense now. Like,
you just puck your end on the green. Like.
Yeah. Did it help your Camogie then, obviously?
Yeah, I think it definitely did. And if anything, it was really good for the brain. You know, it was that it wasn't a really competitive environment. It was more of a learning, fun environment. And it was really good to step away from the field and do something different once or twice a week. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Speaking to Cork Camogie player Saoirse McCarthy and Anton Dohill, a Derry footballer. You've had a rough few weeks from a sporting point of view. Saoirse, you lost the All-Ireland final.
He's giggling. Yeah, no, it's been heartbreaking enough. Obviously, really, really disappointed with Sunday, the 10th of August. You know, it's been a couple of weeks of reflection and learning, to be honest. And I suppose, look, we're all very disappointed, and there's no way about it. It's very hard to pick yourself up back after that, but back playing with the club now and just focusing on that at the moment.
So there's a huge difference between last year and this year. Is a Pacific Ocean of difference between the elation of winning and the despair of losing.
Yeah, and I suppose that's sport, you know. That's what makes winning feel so special, you know. And I suppose if you didn't feel like this after losing, it you're probably doing something wrong. I suppose we all care so much about what we're doing, we put so much effort into it that when it doesn't come off, you're going to be disappointed, you know, and that's probably the risk you take by being a part of it. Yeah, look, it'll be a long winter now until we get back training in January, but I've no doubt with the strength of our squad that we will be back.
Did you have any complaints? Did you just not fire on the day, or what was your feeling?
I don't think it was that either. I think, you know, on an All Ireland final day, anything can happen, and I think we can be really, really proud in time of how we bounced back in the second half with 14 players. And, you know, I suppose we went in 6 points down and came back to level it with a couple of minutes to go. So I suppose it was still in the melting pot. And I think we can be really proud of how we didn't give up and showed that, you know, there was a real desire there to win. I suppose, like I said, Galway are an unbelievable side as well. And, you know, if you're going to be beating them, everything has to be perfect. And I suppose it wasn't. Made too many mistakes to win a game, and that's the bottom line.
It's been a strange year for Camogie, hasn't it, really? Because it started off with all this Scort stuff that thankfully was resolved. But you're looking to build a game. You're looking to get more people to go to Camogie. And I went to the game, went and sat in the Lower Hogan, and I just kind of said to myself, this is about the players. That's what I wanted to feel, that this is about the players. This year's been about the players, not about other associated controversies.
Yeah. I think it took a life of its own, the whole Scort fiasco. I don't think it affected us too much. We obviously, missed out on a Munster final, which I was probably most disappointed with. You know, I would have loved to have played that game and, you know, played against Waterford. It probably would have been an extra game for us in the season that we needed. So for me, it was giving up. That was the worst part of the whole Scarth thing, but obviously had to squash that too. And it's thankfully everybody has a choice now, and you can see in the club game, you have, it's probably a 50-50 split of half the girls wearing shorts and half the girls wearing skirts, and it's brilliant. It just means whoever want, you can wear what you want, and you're
comfortable. By choice.
That's it. Like, I think Saoirse wore a skirt on Ireland final day. I think she was the only one, or there might have been one or two more, but no, like it's all about choice and whatever you're comfortable in. So it was a bit of a distraction, but I don't think we let it affect us too much. And I suppose we go about our business every year. We go out and we want to win every game, and that's not going to happen all the time, unfortunately. But look, full credit to Galway. They came out of a fantastic season. I think they were pretty much unbeaten since the league final, and they're a fantastic team. They're always there, thereabouts. So look, full credit to their win, and it's all about next year now again.
Absolutely, yeah. You're looking forward. Can Derry come back? Two semi-finals, two Ulster titles last few years, and obviously a bit of a tougher run recently.
Oh, we can absolutely come back, yeah. No, that's the goal within the group. This year particularly was quite tough and challenging for us. You know, we didn't have the success on the field that anyone really envisaged going into the year, or that we felt we were capable of. And I think that there's a real hunger in the group, and with the management team we now have in, I would imagine that we're going to have a really good run at it now then, going forward.
Do you like the new rules?
I do. Personally, yep. No, I think they've definitely improved the spectacle of the game. Like, they're not perfect, and there's obviously going to be a bit of adjustment with them as well as we go forward. But I think they're great for the game. They've improved viewership. They've improved everybody's feeling about the game. They're great to play. It helps me for sure. Whenever there's more balls contested long, that it suits me and how.
And also rewards your skills in that
100%,
area.
100%. Yeah. That's great. It's a great. They're great enhancements.
Do you think there should be 4 points for a goal?
With the two-pointer being only 1 point less than a goal, I think 4-point goal makes a bit of sense, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think that's something that I would agree with personally. I think it's too close a difference, 1 point from score a two-pointer or a goal. You know, it makes teams, they might seek it a bit more often, you know.
And then the other thing in the rules you don't like or you'd like to see maybe changed?
A couple of minor things. You know, I'd get rid of the 45 line. I would just get rid of the line, and I would kick the 45s from the 40 arc, because if a 45 is worth 1 point and a free from closer in is worth 2 points, it doesn't make any sense. The 2 point free I probably would get rid of as well, but I think the skill of kicking the ball over the bar from that distance should be rewarded at the same time. But I think that it's too easy, I think, whenever it's within that. I think that I would personally, the black card, yellow card situation, I think the referees are very, like, it's very, very tough to be a referee in Gaelic games at the moment, especially in football. Like, I would get rid of the black card, and anything that's a yellow card offence or a black card offence, I would just have a sin bin.
Yeah.
I think that makes it a lot easier for referees. It would make it a lot easier for fans, because everybody's like, no, that's a black card. No, that's a yellow card. Nobody really knows the difference. And I think that if you had an offence, whether it be a high tackle or whether that be a deliberate pull down, that's just a 10-minute sin bin.
Yeah,
because it protects player safety, and it also makes it easier for.
There's a penalty as well. Cleared like an extra man.
A genuine penalty, because the new rules, if you go down a man, it is hard. Like, we noticed that we played our man in the league this year, and we lost a man midway through the first half, and it became a real uphill battle to try and maintain any foothold in the game, and we ended up losing quite convincingly then. So I think that's a real penalty, and even for 10 minutes it can really change the course of a game. So I think that's something that I would personally do. Maybe if you get really into it, you could limit hand passes and stuff, but it probably goes a little bit away from where the game is and the core values of it as well. So yeah, those would be the big ones for me, just the black card, and then I just get rid of the 45 line and just kick from the arc. Off you go, like, you know, if it goes wide off a hand, then you go from where the arc line is, and it's only worth one. It makes a bit more sense to me.
It'll take a while for this all to work itself out.
was like, I didn't have many things to say. List out his list of rules.
I know. I could probably think of a couple more, but I don't want to, you know, get Jim Gavin to ring me and we can have a chat.
Yeah. You might have other things going on at the moment, Jim Gavin. But this will take a while for it to kind of, for managers to get their head around it. But the way that Kerry did execute it in the final was very impressive. The 5-2 pointers, the Clifford scores, the...
Oh, the Kerry are brilliant. Like, they're my favourite football team to watch. Probably Armagh with a close second, but Kerry play wonderful football. And whenever you have the talent and quality that they have across the board, it's a joy to watch whenever they're straps. And the All-Ireland final was a perfectly executed game plan with unbelievably talented men running it. Like, it's a joy to watch sometimes, to be fair.
So your dad, Anthony Toehill, well known. Did he ever talk to you about the Manchester United trial?
The odd time. It's not something that comes up too often. That's normally whenever somebody like says something about it, and then I'd be like, oh, did you see this? And everybody's like, oh, you know, just shakes his head and stuff like that. But no, I think he's quite proud to have done it, I think.
Yes.
It's a big achievement for somebody from Derry that hadn't really played soccer before to get playing for Man United reserves alongside David Beckham and stuff like that. It's a pretty funny story, to be fair.
It is a good story. It is a good story. So, look, the best of luck with your rest of your year and the Gaelic journey that you're going to go on. Just before we kind of wrap up, maybe the last message you want to give about the reason you're here today, your ambassadors and workshop facilitators for the head of the game for November to get people talking a bit more about mental health. What's the last thing you want to maybe say about it, Saoirse, today?
I suppose just if you are in a senior level in a club or a coach even, and you think that this program would suit your club or your team, is don't even hesitate to sign up, just do it. And I think that's the biggest message, is that like you never know who you're going to help, and you play a part in it too. So I suppose even if you're a parent listening and you think that this would suit your child's team, contact the coach, try and get it organized for that team, and hopefully we can get down and deliver the workshop in your club.
Yeah,
I think Anton's looking to come to Cork for the first time.
Oh, I was the Jazz last year. But I'll come down and do a session with you next time I'm there for sure.
Perfect.
The workshops are brilliant. And I think that there is absolutely nothing to lose from getting this in and to have a chat to any of the teams, boys, girls, whatever. And then all parents and coaches are welcome from within the club. And you never know, it might not help you. It might maybe not help any of the parents. It might help one child. Whatever it does, it definitely someone will get something out of it. And I think that's the main takeaway. Like, just give it a crack. Nothing to lose.
Anton Toehill, Saoirse McCarthy, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, John.
Thanks,
appreciate
man.
Your time. And for more information, folks, visit aheadofthegame.movember.com. If you're affected by any of the issues we spoke about this piece, folks, please contact the Samaritans at 116123 or email jojo@samaritans.ie.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.